Hi and welcome back. This is episode number 266. Today we are talking to Wayne McCartney of Bricolor Technologies. It is a KPO as well as a BPO. They are based here in Manila, Philippines, and they also work with a distributed workforce. Wayne has vast experience in the IT and tech sector, with his previous career spending 17 years in a technology company. So he's brought that experience to Bricolor Technologies, and we dive into what they offer. Obviously, they're an outsourcing supplier and how they can add value to businesses in Australia and across the West. So I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm sure you will too. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/266. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff, and suppliers across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer help make outsourcing easy, so consider them now. And if your BPO, clients, or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to register.payoneer.com/OA or go to our website and we will have links there. Wayne McCartney, the MD and founder of Bricolor Technologies. It's a technical outsourcing supplier here in the Philippines. Hi, Wayne. Welcome to the show.
Derek, hi. How are you?
Great, great. And you're from Australia. There's a lot of outsourcing suppliers now coming over from Australia. Maybe we can kind of explore why that is and why such a big migration over here. But initially, I suppose just give people an oversight. What is Bricolor Technologies and how is it sort of slightly different from the rest of the outsourcing market?
Yeah, Bricolor Technologies is, we have two arms to the business. One is the outsourcing arm, and we're also a Salesforce consulting partner, implementation partner, and generally a software implementation partner. So we have a range of products that we implement for people. And we're actually finding those two things sit really nicely together because we can have a conversation, for instance, about more general outsourcing to our, you know, Salesforce clients. But the two arms are separate. Our vision and the reason we set ourselves up, there's two things that probably distinguish us from a classic BPO. One would be that we are genuinely having a APAC Asian focus, so we're not limiting, you know, it's not a lot of Australian BPOs, I think, focus on their, you know, the local market with the staff offshore in say the Philippines, but we can, you know, we're having a conversation with someone right now, for instance, just hiring staff to supply to for a global contract where they have staff in Sydney, Australia, in Manila locally, in Singapore. So I think there's a market there. And the same applies for the Salesforce. So again, there's synergies. You know, Salesforce is big, it's the number one CRM, and you know, we're look to do deployments in the Philippines, in Singapore, in Thailand, you know. So we have that that regional reach, and it makes us, I think, attractive to clients that might be coming in from say the US or the UK, where they do want to expand regionally, and you know, they're looking for a business that has that focus.
And you focus a lot on IT and development and technical recruitment. Is it a pure software development play, or do you do generalist outsourcing services as well?
No, we do generalist, and one of the offerings we're seeing that's having good traction in the market is blended teams. And what we're trying to do, you know, right down to the almost the solopreneur, small business, up to the SME level, is to say, don't limit yourself to, you know, one skill set. Build a team that gives you coverage across the different areas of your business. But not to have, you know, a lot of complexity about getting started or how many hours, etc. So, as an example, you might really only need accounting competencies, you know, for a couple of hours a week to match your zero transactions, and then you might have a spike in, you know, spike in activity when you're doing invoicing monthly. And so we can layer that into the arrangement so that, you know, you might have a customer service person that works part-time, you might have a general admin that's full-time, you might have, you know, a certified zero accountant, you know, with all the qualifications and Australian experience, who's involved in the account but only when needed. And the same would then go for digital marketing. You know, we've got a client at the moment, we're providing them skilled experienced staff in the ISO context, ISO 27001. And, you know, Manila is a really mature market. You know, there are employees in Manila with global experience, either from Manila or they've travelled and they've worked overseas. And so, you know, it's a highly skilled workforce that we can tap into. And generally it might take us a little longer to find, you know, a more esoteric skill set, but they do exist. You know, one we heard was Chinese speaking loan processors. It's like, yeah, actually they're there. You know, we go look for them. We do a lot of recruitment through, you know, more direct methods. So we're not only, you know, advertising for staff, we're going and finding those specialist skill sets for clients that require them.
Yeah, and I talk to a lot of clients and they're like, you know, can you find X or can you find Y? And it's, you know, often the answer is of course, you know, this is a huge employment market. There's 110 million people here. Manila is a very established, very mature, dense city. There's anything you want in any sort of level of profession and job market, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got staff. One of my staff had an entire career almost in Singapore before coming back to Manila. So he'd been exposed to, you know, that regional context and also just the way you do business in different parts of the world. Another staff member, you know, a lot of Filipinos go perhaps to the Middle East and, you know, they've had global experience there. That's a global workforce. And then they've come back to the Philippines and, you know, there's been a trend, I think, as the market shifted in the Philippines in the last few years where people who have traditionally had to work offshore to, you know, have a career and employment are now finding they can come back to Manila and have both, have a meaningful career and, you know, live locally, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, fundamentally, these BPO workers or outsourcing workers, they are really offshore, but they're working from home, aren't they? You know, they're working with US companies, Australian companies, and getting really good global experience, but able to do it from Manila, which benefits both people, well, all parties, because obviously then there's a cost savings, but then there's great exposure and learnings. So yeah, it's incredible what's happening. And I think it's only been in the last 10 years that this sort of explosion of skills and competencies and professions available has really happened. So it's exciting times. But Wayne, I just want to go back and explore your past a little bit. You're Australian. You're based in Newcastle. Your company is over here in the Philippines. And obviously you're, you know, a huge proponent of outsourcing and encouraging businesses across the world to use Philippine resources. What's your personal journey and how did you stumble across this eureka moment?
Yeah, it's a good question. The company I worked for prior to starting up Bricoleur, I was actually with them for 17 years and we were in the mortgage space in the finance industry in Australia, and the GFC hit that market, you know, non-bank lending particularly, which was one of our niches, hit that market really hard. And so it was probably a defensive play initially to look offshore. And, you know, we looked at India, we looked at the Philippines as locations. We liked the Philippines and we started there. You know, we started with a couple of tech support guys and a couple of developers, one anchor client, and we grew that across, well, from the GFC through to last year. We'd scaled that dramatically. We had, you know, multiple offices in multiple multiple floors and multiple offices in, in districts of Manila.
And so the GFC is the financial crisis in about 2008.
Yeah, so sorry, I'm forgetting that it's not current. Yeah, the global financial crisis. Yeah, the meltdown of the finance markets, particularly for lending. So it hit the home loan industry, and I think, you know, there's a bit of a property slowdown at the same time. From memory, you couldn't borrow money basically, because I remember I was trying to at the time to you know, get a mortgage, and it just lending markets went into free fall. So.
And it's funny, isn't it? Because often outsourcing is a counter-cyclical industry, because people are like, you know, we're not going to outsource, we don't want to outsource. And then as soon as there's a downturn, they're cutting costs, they're looking for opportunities to build a better, more efficient organization. And that was the same then with the organization that you were working with. And how many staff then? So that's about a 10-year period. How many staff do they have in the Philippines now?
It was stay in touch, but I wouldn't know the numbers. But it's now in the hundreds.
Right.
You know, we made our newbie mistakes a long time ago, and I think for me, launching Brick Allure, there's some differences in the models, and one of them is we're a distributed company. But you know, for me, it's version two. It's do it without the learning curve and do it better, bigger, faster, and so that's where we've set off.
Great. And what were you saying about the previous clients and the realization of clients that, because, you know, your last business was very technical as well, and there's also a lot of regulation, and people are very apprehensive about outsourcing typically, but eventually you found that a lot moved across?
Look, a lot of it, yeah, a lot of it was mindset. We're very rigorous. We work with clients that have ISO 27001, and because it's a finance industry, you know, Australian regulators, ASIC, etc., in Australia. And so one of the ways we solve for that is we make sure our staff really rigorously work to our clients' processes and procedures. You know, we do all the vetting. We do training on the Privacy Act in whatever the jurisdiction is. And, you know, as long as the checks and balances are there and the procedures are followed, you know, the clients are comfortable. We have an Australian bank at the moment. We've set up a team for, and they're, you know, they've got all kinds of accountabilities, and they're really comfortable with the way we go about it. So you can solve for it, basically. And it comes down to, when you look at it, really, you would ask, you know, I would have a conversation with a client about what the security measures are like for their onshore staff. And talk about the risks there, and then talk about the offshore staff as simply being an extension of that. You know, the biggest risk, I think, too, the two risks really in terms of security and privacy, et cetera, are human error. You know, someone makes a mistake. We've all sent the wrong spreadsheet to the wrong email address and then panicked. So, you know, that's a process and a training conversation. And then if you look at the risk, your current sales manager is the person most likely, if you remove the human error, the person most likely to take sensitive information out of your business is when your sales guy downloads his contact list and goes to a competitor or starts up on his own or something like that. In reality, that's more likely to happen. You know, most of our staff, you know, our staff, they have mortgages, they have families, they have kids, they have careers, they're normal people. You know, there's nothing different about them per se. And so you know, the percentage of the population that are honest or dishonest is absolutely no different than in Australia. And so we also can bring some sort of monitoring capabilities to bear, which just helps, I think, the Australian management of the client sleep well at night. But it doesn't, I think, particularly change anything, but helps them feel comfortable about the engagement, particularly in the early days. Then that's certainly something we do.
How does that conversation go? Because there is the regulatory requirement, isn't there, to go through certain security measures, PIC compliance, and for the HIPAA compliance, for the healthcare and things like that. And then, as you say, but typically it comes down to either, people malevolence, which is generally pretty rare, or people's mistakes. And how are you able to assure people? Because generally what I find is people at the beginning, they're like, it's them and us. How can we trust them? Who are these people? But then within about 6 months, they realize that these are just humans. They're doing their best. As you said, they've got their families and careers. They're basically the same as us. But until that point, I think that people expect to bring out the big guns, lock everything down, have sort of secured entrance at the hotel, at the lobby. Where is that happy medium, do you find? And also to stay compliant then with the regulations?
Yeah, I think it's really a conversation you have with the clients. And look, you wouldn't, for any staff member anywhere, you wouldn't necessarily give them exposure to everything initially. There's a training period, there's a familiarisation period. I don't think it plays any differently. As soon as you've got an office in, Melbourne and Sydney, or an office in London and Manchester, or whatever it might be, you've got that conversation about how you operationally manage a business across multiple locations. Mm. And it's a choice. So there may be, certain parts of a role that you don't send offshore. There may be some restructuring. It may not be for everyone. Different companies have different risk appetites, and that's, entirely appropriate. But I think, what we've seen is so the other thing that we did previously is we took our Manila office through ISO 27001 accreditation. So ISO 27001 is information security. So there were times where we would find ourselves having conversations about security and risk with clients where our staff were more sophisticated than their operations were anyway. Mm. And you dial it up and you dial it down, but some of our clients, because of the industry we were in, came to us and said, look, can you do this? Because, our corporate risk says we're really comfortable with it if you have ISO 27001 or operate to those standards. And we still do that today. If we've got an ISO 27001 client, we'll do some training induction for the staff, and then they'll just work within that protocol. We did it because it makes it a very short conversation about security. Mm-hmm. You just say, and this is why as a client explained to us, just put a big sign up that says we have ISO 27001, and the conversation goes away almost, because it's a shorthand for saying, the level of security that you're operating under.
Right. Yeah.
I think it fades. It is. It's a really early conversation you have with potential clients if they're really new to it. Otherwise, it's a normal risk compliance conversation you have, and you can solve for that.
Yeah, fantastic. And typically, as you say, it's often, there are incredibly sophisticated operations here. Any level of security you require is deliverable. And then often the weak point can actually be with the client side, depending on how big they are, of course. But if they're in the SME, SMB market, typically the opportunity for leakage can be greater on their side, where they're, I suppose, maybe complacency is a little bit higher.
It's it's simple things like, you know, ensuring that everyone has their own password, ensuring that your own data is stored securely, whether it's in the cloud, you know, how people get access, whether they access through a VPN, whether they're using multi-factor authentication, you know, all of these things, whether, you know, you've got data leakage, you know, like, so Office now has data leakage protection tools, so you can get a long way by looking at, you know, what you dial up in terms of access, etc. And, you know, fraud / criminal activity is one element, but it's you know, you hear horror stories in Australia without an outsourcing conversation, you know, and you then deal with that. You know, you have confidentiality clauses in employee contracts, you have confidentiality clauses, as you know, with us as a supplier. You know, we get the authorities involved and we nail it down. And again, in 20 years of working in Plus and working in IT, you know, it can be your onshore guy that leaves his laptop in the back of a car in the rocks and goes off to the pub and comes back and finds his laptop's disappeared. It happens, you know, there are, again, if your hard drive's encrypted and the USB ports are locked down, and, you know, there's a whole lot of things you can do.
Yeah, typically it's not the highest of technical kind of hacks, is it, that cause leakage? It's really just mistakes or people forgetting things. Yeah. So you were talking about, you know, you offer a range of services, right, from full-time dedicated staffing over to more project or part-time gigs, especially within the IT sector. There's a lot of project-oriented work, and especially for the sort of SMB market, these, I suppose, you know, if someone wants to revamp their website, and I think a lot of people refer to outsourcing as, look, I need a website done or I need my accounts audited, and that isn't really the sweet spot for a lot of outsourcing suppliers. What is your conversation like with people that are, you know, looking, and especially within the sort of tech sector, that are looking for project versus ongoing roles?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, we're really excited about our as-needed model, and it does play across IT and, you know, marketing accounts, etc. So, you know, we've got clients that might have a digital marketing campaign and, you know, they want to run something for 2 weeks and then trickle, you know, drip feed it from there. You know, we offer pay-as-you-go system admin, certified system admins for Salesforce. And that's a really interesting one because, you know, you invest in some software, you want to keep it current, but it's not a full-time overhead. It's a tweak here. It's a, can we build a new report there? And the ability to just dial that up and dial that down without any, you know, retainers or, you know, minimum part-time stipulations. Clients are really responding to that. It's not common at this point in time that I'm aware of, and I think that's why we're getting great traction with it. It is a point of differentiation for us, but our clients are loving it because, you know, it extends the conversation about how we can help them. And I think one of the things we're trying to do is look at a whole of business perspective to say, well, how do we solve for the, you know, the business solution you're looking for, rather than just selling, you know, hours as almost a commodity. You know, what are the bits that you would normally have left over? Yeah, we can build your website. Yeah, we've got a guy that does brochures and PowerPoint slides and banners and T-shirts, and but you don't, you know, you're not doing that all day, every day. So you might have a design project and it might be, you know, a week's worth of work. It might be a couple of hours worth of work. But I think the nice thing too then is if you're engaging sort of at a service level and thinking whole of business with a provider, you can then, you know, if that piece of work needs tweaking in 6 months' time, or you you know, you've got the next initiative. You've got that continuity where, you know, it's the same staff. We've got, you know, all the collateral on file. You know, we just pick it up again when you need us to and move it forward.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a hybrid, you know. You know, I think most projects, including technology ones, there's always that residual support out the other side. And it's the same when we do Salesforce implementations, you know. I think the client and there's a risk that the client and the implementer both just think about the initial project. But when you're rolling out software, if it's not kept current and you're not thinking about how you future-proof yourself, then, you know, over time it becomes less relevant, and then you suddenly discover staff have stopped using bits because it no longer supports where your business has gone. And so we like to have a conversation about the project and then what happens afterwards and build those two things together into the engagement.
Yeah, there's that whole sort of broader architecture conversation, yeah, look, I suppose, isn't there? But
yeah,
again, you know, people can tap into your experience and expertise as well, isn't it? It's not just kind of getting a bum on a seat. It's more about tapping into your vast experience.
Absolutely. Look, it's I should add, we talked earlier, you know, we're not talking just entry level positions here. We're talking, you know, layers of management all the way up that have that global experience. And so, you know, as you layer the team, we bring that knowledge of how to structure and expand teams to the table, technical skills. And then so, you know, part of our secret sauce is how you make remote teams work so that they're high-performing teams, how you solve for the normal, you know, people being people, things that happen in an organisation.
Mm.
How you smooth out the conversational disconnects between local staff and remote staff. And I think they're the things that if your supplier is just, as you say, giving you a bum on your seat, then you're missing a trick. You know, you're not leveraging the solution as much as you could because you're not getting that experience baked into the engagement. You know, technical skills you can hire for. It's how you run the team pragmatically so that it works. And I think too, right-sizing the engagement. So, you know, one of the things we say to people who are looking to outsource is think about who you're engaging with, because it's like no other, you know, any other business engagement. If you're, you know, can we work with these people? And if, you know, you're looking for two staff and it's really important for you what those two staff are doing, but you know, the average team size from the company you're talking to is 50 or 100, then, you know, the level of attention you get will be, you know, proportionate. We like to sort of engage, and to you, you know, the bigger, you probably have a more structured bums on seat style engagement. We like to dial up and dial down the level of engagement so that it suits the client. So for a small business or a solopreneur, you know, we're only as sophisticated as they need us to be. But then we go right up to, you know, the level, the banking telco level, where we bring that level of rigor to the engagement.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you find that people start, they give you a go, and then, you know, it's very role specific, and then you know, they just give it all over to you, to the Philippines generally, because they're realizing that actually this is an incredible resource and, you know, why not get it all done? Do you see quite a lot of role creep and just adopting more and more functions of a business?
Yeah, we do. It's very common. You know, we'd also say, look, to get started, don't overthink it. You know, there's a school of thought that says it's months of planning and everything needs to be in place. And if you're that organized, you probably wouldn't be having an outsourcing conversation anyway. So businesses are businesses. We all know that when we, you know, our own businesses, you know, it's everything shiny on the surface. And, you know, we engage with clients and there's all these problems they're trying to solve for, and that's normal. Going with the low-hanging fruit is actually a good strategy. And what we say is maybe take your customer service staff as an example. If you're trying to, you know, scale cost effectively in customer service, look at look at where they add value to clients, look at all the things they do in their day that don't add any value to clients, and then peel that bottom level off first. And so then you've got some, suddenly your Australian staff are seeing a real impact. They've got more headspace to work with clients. They're not doing, they're not just doing general administrative stuff. And then over time, you can introduce staff to working in directly with clients, once they've gone through the training and the learning curve. And you find yourself, I used to do it myself with teams in Australia and teams in the Philippines. You'd find yourself walking around the office thinking, why aren't we doing that in Manila? Mm. The guys in Manila could do that really easily. I think, and you made a comment earlier about cyclical, but the nice thing about outsourcing from the client's perspective is it works both ways. Sure, it's cost savings and efficiencies, and protecting your margins, but it's also an opportunity to scale. And once you grow into it, you start to talk about profit centers being driven out of the Philippines, and it's perfectly achievable.
For sure. That's when it gets really exciting, isn't it? And people do just see it as a cost-cutting exercise. But A, there's cost-cutting. B, you can add actually revenue-generating aspects to the business. And C, also, when you have access to cheaper resources, you can try other things. You can test other things. You can explore different things. It's less lumpy to hire new teams. And so it gets really exciting when you combine all three, because it can just be, an incredible opportunity of both saving money, access to better resources, and then just pushing revenues forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, I like your comment about experimenting. I mean, that's where some of the engagements we have now, you wouldn't normally, you'd have a gap in your skill set in your organisation because it's not a full-time role. You don't want to engage a third party to do it. And if you're already outsourcing, then you can run controlled experiments, particularly with our as-needed model, to say, okay, well, what if we did this? What would it look like? How would it work? And then if it, you learn from it. I mean, we've got a client, I was talking to him the other day, we did some work for him. We both went into it. It was some digital marketing. We both went into it to see what would happen. And we learned some things and they said, that's great. Let's stop for a while. And he rang and said to me the other day and said, okay, we're ready to go with version two from what we learned last time. I'll call you in a couple of weeks once we've got it sorted. But, he's running, pilots of sales initiatives and marketing initiatives that he probably wouldn't be able to tackle otherwise.
Mm. Yeah, it just gives you more space, doesn't it? Because if you've got to take someone on in Sydney for $100,000 a year, then you really think twice about, wasting time on doing tests. But, whereas in the Philippines, you can actually have an entire team just dedicated to exploring new opportunities, new tests, new processes, because it's cost effective, isn't it?
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good.
And I think too, it works all the way down almost to solopreneur level where, and I'm, at the moment for, you know, as a businessman, you've, you know, got a lot of things that you need to have on your radar and things you're paying attention to and things that don't get done. And so, you know, marketing is traditionally something that drops to the bottom. And I've really enjoyed recently expanding my internal team, and, you know, they also work for clients where stuff just happens, you know. I've got an opportunity to place an ad with someone, but I need an ad. Deadline's when? Next Friday. Am I going to get to that? Well, I could, but I'm going to peel off my attention headspace from something to do the ad. And now I find, you know, things just get done and it's great, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day, actually. It's very much like life, isn't it? You know, like everyone intends to be eating well and going to the gym and doing all these things, but you get busy, you know, so you start it for 2 weeks and then it drops off. And it's very much the same with sort of small and medium-sized businesses, I think. If there isn't a process, you need to be completely unemotional about it. You need to sort of design and build a process, get the people into the process, iterate that process for a while, and then it's set and it's going, and then it will happen. Whereas, you know, I think the smaller businesses, they kind of start something for a while, they get busy, they get distracted, and then it's stopped. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, oh, you know, that thing we said we were going to do. Yeah. We didn't do it. Yeah. And this way it actually happens. It gets done. It's great. I think though that there's a caveat on that is if you micromanage it, then it's still chewing up your time. You need to, you know, have a level of belief that if I give someone something to do and give them the tools and the, you know, then it'll get done. And, you know, that's part of how we recruit, to make sure that staff are comfortable, you know, working to direction but not under constant supervision. You know, we would layer that supervision into the team if it was a requirement for a help desk or something, but otherwise, you know, people respond well to being, you know, give them something to do and get out of their way, and you get on with what you're doing and they get on with what you're doing. And, you know, it's a minimal effort then to just check in and tweak, you know, particularly with, I'm using brochures because it's something we've been doing, but, you know, then you just iterate. Okay. Well, and two, I mean, from my headspace, you know, we end up with a result that's better than I would have probably imagined, and we do it incrementally. So we do a bit, we look at it, we tweak it, we get to version one, you know, we probably road test it, we come back to version two. And so, you know, we use Slack, for instance, for internal communication. You know, the employee will pop, you know, three options for iterations, and I'll glance at them and I'll say, yeah, I like the middle one, but change this, change that. And then we'll look at it again. And so it's, you know, a couple of minutes of my time to keep the thing moving. Whereas, you know, to have the headspace to do something like that myself, I'd need to peel out, you know, several hours, which just doesn't happen. So, and it's, you know, I look at it as organizational muscle. I mean, we're talking small business and, you know, solopreneurs here, but you're building organizational muscle and you're starting to build a support framework around yourselves where you focus on, you know, it's the one-inch punch, the thing you do that makes a difference and, you know, is why you get out of bed in the morning, and build a support network around you to for everything else. And, you know, initially it sounds scary and it's almost an act of faith, but, you know, we find that people, once they start, you know, they then start to push the boundaries of, well, how much can I actually hand over to someone else? And again, that's for a small business or a solopreneur, that's a question you have onshore or offshore. I think, you know, with having staff outsourced, then there are a whole lot of headaches around payroll and HR and admin and all those kind of things, and finding seats for them and equipment and, you know, all of those go away. And, you know, that's a value add for a small business. There's whole levels of, you know, routine admin that you don't need to think about. And we went down that path with Bricolure as a distributed company. I, you know, having multiple offices in multiple buildings, we found that, you know, there was an overhead of, you know, there's a fire in the food court and we have to evacuate. The internet's not working. You know, the communal toilets on the floor have been, you know, aren't being cleaned regularly enough, and you know, all the staff are complaining about, you know, rightly so, about personal hygiene, and so it's an overhead that you, you know, in a distributed company, you say, well, we're going to dispense with all of that. The other thing we've found is that, you know, for instance, the earthquake in Manila earlier this year was in Pampanga, and you saw photos of, you know, all the ceilings had come down in the workspaces, and you know, the cables have come down after that, and it took best part of a week for some of them to get back up and running. And so there's, you know, hundreds of staff and, you know, clients that are down in the meantime. With a distributed company, you're also mitigating for that kind of risk. And you know, the Philippines does have you know, interesting events like typhoons and traffic and earthquakes, and so it's actually, we're finding that as a business continuity strategy, it works really, really well.
That's good. That's interesting. And especially, you know, blended with the higher security and the ISO offerings that you have, that still the distributed workforce works and provides value for all parties.
Yeah, it is. We'll go and source an office for, we tend to use co-working spaces as hubs to bring people together. Mm. And for, you know, clients come to visit and you know, want to have a place to meet staff, you know, where there are facilities. And we do set up offices for clients, but, you know, it's really clear that that's a client stipulation, and we source the office to the client's spec, but it's built into their contract as part of the service we provide. And that way it's clear. And it's interesting already, that everyone should turn up to the office every day starts to get relaxed pretty quickly. And so we've seen clients that have said, oh, yeah, why did we get an office again?
Right.
It's against perception. But the reality, I mean, you know, Manila traffic, it's a force of nature. And, you know, our staff work Australian time zones, so they're commuting. You know, they're up early to get to work. And it doesn't take much, you know, a traffic event or some rain or something for Manila traffic to just,
for sure. Yeah.
You know, you've experienced it, and you know, then you're having an attendance conversation and a tardiness conversation, and the distributed model, that all just evaporates. The staff get 2.5 hours each way commute back into their life. They spend more time with their family. They're more refreshed, they're more energized, they don't have carbon monoxide poisoning by the time they get to work. You know, it happens, you see it, you know, all of those things. So
yeah, there's a lot of arguments for it, isn't there? Yeah,
it is. Look, it's happening. I think it's the next, yeah, absolutely. I think it's the next evolution. In the last couple of years, you know, in the classic BPO, more and more, you know, you'd hear of people would resign and you'd ask them why, and you know, they go into, you know, in the exit interview they go into the why, and very prevalent working from home, whether that was something the staff member was looking for or not. You know, more and more it's becoming the norm in Manila. I think it's really early days. But our sense is that it's a genuine trend. It's not a blip, you know. And if you wind back a bit, you know, there's some people, really large companies, that are really vocal about how they do this and that it works for them. So, you know, we're certainly not the first, but, you know, you could probably make an argument for the whole commute to the office thing and back is maybe historically only been around for, you know, a very short period of time. People working where they live, I think, is more sustainable, and historically, just, you know, you look across history and it's the way people normally work.
Good, yeah, and I assume.
Sorry, a bit of a. You can see I'm an advocate of it, and also, you know, I do it. I'm set up here. We have co-working spaces in Australia, but you know, I work from home. I've been doing that for a long time, and I'm very productive. And I just believe if the boss can do it, then the staff should be able to do it as well.
Yeah, no, look, I totally agree, and obviously, you know, the whole movement towards remote work benefits the outsourcing industry, because then the, you know, small and medium-sized business of the world, they sort of they can relate better to having people sitting in the Philippines when they don't have an office themselves, you know. So it gets everyone more into an online community, more working through tools as opposed to, you know, just by sitting physically next to each other. So yeah, there's definitely a rising movement. I do worry about sort of efficiency levels of people, you know, and again, I sort of related to my example of the gym. I've always gone to the gym. I've always been fit, but if I don't actually go to the gym, I probably wouldn't exercise. And I do worry sometimes about the efficiency of people. But having said that, you know, I also think that it doesn't necessarily matter if they're sitting in the office or at home. People can have enough opportunity to slack off or be unproductive.
Yeah. Look, I think it's just a different way of working. It, as you said, it's not better or worse. You could choose to have a home gym. What's changed, I think, too recently is the prevalence of Zoom or Skype, etc. You know, you don't need a massive teleconferencing solution that's expensive to communicate remotely. We're moving really quickly. We've shut down how the amount of internal communication is via email, and how much is actually done via, you know, Slack or you know, collaboration tools. Mm. I think they make a big difference. What you miss out is the ability to just walk past someone's desk and look over someone's shoulder. But you can do screen sharing through Zoom or Skype. So usually if there's something, it's like, okay, let's jump on a call and we'll take a look at it. The trade-off is you also lose all those inefficiencies of, you know, water cooler conversations, et cetera, where people are at work but they're not necessarily productive anyway, and staff actually come back and say, look, it's great. I'm not in a large, so in a BPO environment, you've probably got open cubicles and you'll be on a large floor and you'll have other teams and you'll have background noise. And, you know, if they're doing work that requires concentration, they say, we actually, you know, I actually love the fact that I can work uninterrupted. And I think too, partly, you know, we've run teams that are all in the same office and they communicate via Skype anyway. So there'll be a subliminal conversation going on about where are we going for lunch?
Yeah, or for sure.
Are we going to the pub afterwards? And they're all in the same office. And I used to kind of scratch my head about, you know, over that. And I've seen it in Australia as well as overseas. I think it's a generational thing where people have grown up going to uni where they're, you know, my son's 10 and he's on multiple kind of communication tools. You know, he was chatting with a classmate the other night organizing a basketball tournament. It's normal now, and people have grown up collaborating with uni projects and you know, all those kind of things.
Yeah. And using, I think that's those tools.
And so it's probably less efficient if it's not normal to you. You know, it's like, you know, if you're 70 and you decide to use email, you haven't been sending email for years and years. And, you know, this is the next evolution of communicating and staying in touch. And half the time my teammates in terms of and staff in terms of problem solving is, oh no, I already chatted to so-and-so and we sorted it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah,
they're just, it's wired that that's how you work with co-members. So that's how they work anyway. So the remote thing is, you know, is actually, it's a non-issue for them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for the next generation, like your son, when he's in corporate life, it will be very natural for him to outsource or have offshore staffing because he's just grown up communicating through tools, through software, through chats, through apps, you know, and so it would seem less relevant to have to recruit people that are geographically located, I suppose. So I do see this kind of second wave coming as a result, and it all ties into the remote work and the globalization and the online tools and collaboration. It's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, I've actually, I mean, we've gone to the next level. So I work regularly, partly because of the need to travel. But, you know, I spend part of my time in Manila. I spend part of the year in Thailand. I spend part of my time in various cities in Australia. And so I've actually, part of, and it's great if I do move locations. Like I'll be spending some time in Singapore en route to Manila for the Christmas party soon. And it's a good opportunity to road test the resilience of your business. If you can be anywhere, and by extension your staff can be anywhere, and it runs, and you know every time I do a journey and I go and work somewhere else, I learn, and it's almost you've stepped out of your normal space and you can sort of look at your own operations at arm's length, and I'll observe process improvements or disconnects, and we then work to address those. And so, you know, your organisation is becoming more and more resilient. It means if a staff member does need to move locations or need some flexibility, again, it's baked into the DNA of the company. And I think the discipline of working with offshore staff, you know, there's some, you know, all of that comes along with it. That's not the problem you're immediately trying to solve, but definitely it's a benefit.
Absolutely, and it's incredible, isn't it, how all of this is evolving in front of us so fast.
So it's really exciting, yeah.
Yeah, if people want to learn more, and also, you know, if they want to engage, and we've spoken about just starting basically, you know, not overthinking it, not building crazy processes, just starting with one function, and as well you can do sort of partial hours, partial functions, as well as sort of having that strategic oversight. How do you recommend people get started, or what is the typical process you walk them through?
I think have a conversation. Start with a conversation. Have a conversation that involves potential suppliers and also your internal stakeholders, so that you can, you know, build that input into your planning. And sometimes it's not the right time. Sometimes it's great information and you'll come back to it. You know, we have a lot of conversations with clients where they say, oh, we're thinking of outsourcing. We're not quite ready, but, you know we don't know everything we need to know. And so, you know, there might be initial conversation and 6 months later, yeah, we're ready. Let's go. I think it helps if you have a conversation and you do engage someone that's done it before. You know, it's like anything. It's like, I don't know, playing the piano or art, or, you know, playing football or running a business. You know, pitch it at a level of sophistication with the understanding that as you get into it, you'll and live with it and learn from it, it'll evolve. You know, don't overthink and don't have a 5-year plan, particularly have a vision, but don't get bogged down in the detail, because, you know, in a year's time you'll still be planning, and whatever you think it might look like, it probably won't, you know, if that makes sense.
For sure. Yeah. And companies are always iterating, aren't they? Things are iterating.
Yeah, exactly. And that's more and more so, and the iterations come quicker. You know, it's a dynamic environment. I think too that then extends out into your first hire. Get them involved in the change process, because what you think it will look like and what it will turn out to be can be very different.
Absolutely. Thank you, Wayne. It's a good place to leave it. And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they, how do you recommend they do that?
I think, you know, we Google really well, Bricoleur, BRICOLEUR. I'm also on LinkedIn. We'll have a Facebook page pretty soon, so try social media. Yeah, look, and happy to just have a conversation with people. It's, you know, it's a journey, and, you know, if you have someone just to talk it through with initially, then at least you can visualize it and think about how it might work for you.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time, Wayne. Great insights.
Appreciate it, Derek. Great to catch up. Thank you.
That was Wayne McCartney of Bricoleur Technologies. If you want to get in touch with Wayne or know any more about this episode, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/266. And of course, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.